Hi, Mackenzie, and this is the Male Spouse Brief. Happy Friday. I hope you guys had a wonderful week. I'm sorry that the podcast has been posted on so many different days for the last couple of weeks. Life has been so hectic. I am here right now in Maryland slash DC slash Baltimore area for my schoolhouse, and it is truthfully nothing like I expected. And so adjusting to being back in a school environment has been interesting to say the least. We are in class from 8 to 4 every single day, and then I have anywhere from 1 to 3 hours of homework a night. And so once you add that all up, plus working out, showering, making food, it really does, your day's gone. I feel like I've been in bed asleep before 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. every single day. And I think it's just interesting, like the schoolhouse hasn't been what I expected because it's a joint school and I've only been to Navy school so far, and it's just been interesting with like how everything goes about it. But I'm gonna do a full-on podcast about it once we're done, but I'll do little small updates throughout it. But overall, it's been all right. I feel like I'm adjusting and it's gonna be good. I'm here until December. And it's interesting living back in a hotel and not at your house and things like that. But overall, there's some benefits to it, so I'm focusing on the positives. Today on the podcast, we have Tony Curtis, and I went to OCS with him. And he is a PAO. He's here with me at Dinfos right now, so we're surviving together. And he has such a cool life story when it comes to the Navy and all that he's experienced. He was definitely somebody that I leaned on while I was at OCS for advice and help. I think Mustangs are amazing. Mustangs are people that were prior enlisted in the military and then went the officer route. They are so full of knowledge and always willing to help. And that is the epitome of Curtis. He is always willing to help, always there to make somebody laugh and throw in a good joke, and I'm really grateful. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. He dives into what his career is like, what made him change his mind, how we met, and everything in between. So I hope you guys enjoy, and without further ado, here is Curtis. All right, so I'm here with Curtis. How about you introduce yourself?
Hello, I am Ensign Tony Curtis. I've been in the Navy for coming up on 15
What
years.
is your like date?
November 15th.
Oh, that's
So,
exciting.
while we're here at the school.
Yeah, we'll have to celebrate.
But yeah, I don't get a raise this time, so we
Okay,
can still celebrate.
so 15 years. Talk about, I guess, why you first joined or what made you decide the Navy.
So, I grew up in South Dakota.
Come.
I'm one of 5 people you'll ever meet from South Dakota. And I was in my junior year of high school, not doing well. I was underage drinking a lot, and I just did not have my life together. And going into my senior year, I hadn't really thought about college. I knew it was going to cost money to go and did not have that. My parents never really talked to me about going to college, didn't apply for scholarships. I don't think I would have been eligible. And so I kind of pre-ruled all that stuff out before I even joined, before I even got to my senior year. And so I went and to talk to recruiters. My dad was in the Air Force. He did 4 years in the Air Force.
Nice.
And so I'd thought about doing that route, but legitimately, when I went to their office, they were gone for lunch. I stay there at the golf course, but they were out of the office. And so I was like, okay, I'll go next door and started talking to the Navy.
Oh,
It just so happened that one of my recruiters was a photographer's mate.
wow. Okay.
They had just recently had a merger to become mass communication specialists, and I had attended 3 years of photography classes in my high school.
Nice.
And so I knew that if I wanted to join, I wanted to be a photographer of some capacity. They said the merger just happened. It was in July of 2006, and this was like right after that. And they said, it's not gonna happen. We're overmanned. We aren't gonna have any spots available for you for the longest time. And I was like, okay, well, what are my other options? And I had a decently high ASVAB score. And so they told me, you could be a nuke. you could go and be a nuke. You'll get all these reenlistment bonuses. We can get you an $8,000 bonus, which I found out is not very high for nuke bonuses.
Yeah.
They said we can get you $8,000. You can buy all the camera equipment you want. You'll go on carriers and submarines, and you'll see the world. And then whenever you get off the ship, you can take all these great photos. And I was like, yeah.
Recruiters know how to sell it.
They did. They absolutely sold it. They were like, yeah, absolutely. And for every month that you're in the delayed entry program, we'll give you another $100. I was like, yeah, I need $100 because I'm 17. I don't know any better. So I sign up for a nuke, go through that whole process. And then that January, I actually broke my arm snowboarding. And a couple months after that, I was talking to a close friend of mine, and she kind of talked me through like what I was thinking about joining the Navy. And I kind of came to the conclusion that I didn't want to join unless I could do the mass communications specialist job.
Yeah.
And so I told the recruiter that, and the recruiter got on his motorcycle, drove over to my house, and like wanted to talk to me. And was like, look, I can't get you a spot. It's going to be at least 6 months. And I was like, I will wait 6 months if I can get this one specific job. Like, so you'll still sign like a contract, you'll still join the Navy. I was like, if you give me that job, I will stay in the process.
Oh, cool.
So I graduated high school in 2007, and then
six months. I was 8 years old.
Thanks for that. Oh, I hate this already.
Sorry, when you said 2006, I was like, I was in second grade.
Yeah. I hate this. So in 2007, November, when you were nine, maybe?
Eight
still. At that point, I was able to go to boot camp. I went to the Defense Information School, where we're at now.
Oh, that's cool.
In January 2008, got there Martin Luther King weekend. 6 months later, graduated.
So you guys stay here for 6 months for...
For the A school.
For the A school, wow.
For the initial A school for mass communication specialists at that time. It was... maybe it was 7 months.
But still like a decent chunk.
Oh, yeah. At the time, we were told it was like one of the longest A schools. Nuke school is longer, but it's like a combination of A school, C schools and stuff.
Yeah.
But we have one of the longer ones. So, yeah, I lived in a building that's been condemned, and I think the Marines live in it now.
Oh.
But it's just like a couple blocks over now, which is cool.
Wow, that's cool. Okay. And then share where you all went as... Like, where all your different duty stations were.
Mm-hmm. After graduating A school, I went to AFN Naples in Italy, which was an awesome first tour. I was there as a radio DJ.
Did you choose
broadcast.
That?
It was presented to me. There was people in the class ahead of us that had those orders. They were both married. And at the time, as a first tour, you could not take your spouse with you overseas. And so they would have had to geo-batch where they would go over there and then their wives would stay wherever.
Or their husbands.
Or their husband. Their spouses.
No, I'm just
their spouses. Just those two had wives. Yeah. So, but the two of them would have had to go over there without their spouses.
Ugh.
And they said, no, that's not for us. So then their orders rolled back to our class. And me and another friend of mine, we got orders to go over to Italy instead.
That is so cool.
And it was awesome. Like that was such a great first duty station. I was an E1 in the Navy at the time. And
living in Italy.
Living in Italy, yeah. Living in barracks. It was like a 45-minute walk to the train station. From there, could get to Rome in 2 hours, could get down to Naples in like 30 minutes. It was cheap. And so I used that first tour to really like travel all of Italy because that's all I could afford. But while I was there, I met my wife, Lindsay, about 3 or 4 months after being there. And we started dating. Year later, proposed, and then married a few months after that.
That is so cool.
So that was my big takeaway from the first duty station. So after I left AFN Naples, I went to the USS George H.W. Bush out of Norfolk, Virginia. They had just been commissioned. They hadn't even been on their first deployment yet. So I was getting there at a pretty exciting time. They were done with the shipyards, and they were getting ready for their first deployment in 2011. So I showed up there. I was an E4 at the time, so I made a little bit of rank. Took the test for E5, put that on, I think, right before deployment, like March of 2011.
What was it like deploying with a ship for the first time? Because that's what I'll experience next year with the Ford.
Deploying on a carrier that's brand new, which is really similar to what you're going to be doing, was awesome.
Okay.
I'm not saying, like, new ships have, like, all the gear is perfect and wonderful, but everything's a little bit nicer. I did a deployment that we'll talk about later where I was on one of the oldest carriers. And it was night and day different in terms of, like, the quality of the equipment. when we were on the bush, it was fun because we were kind of pioneering some stuff. And the longer you're in the Navy, you'll hear people say, well, this is the way we've always done it.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible mentality. On the bush, it was a mix of all these people saying, well, when I was on this ship, we did it this way. When I was on this ship, we did it that way. And so on this ship, we were kind of like taking those ideas, putting them together, and coming out with something that we felt was new and slightly different. So I'm curious to see how that ship operates now.
Mm-hmm.
If we did stuff now that they're saying this is how we've always done it.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Okay, so then after the bush, you headed where?
So I did 3 years to the day on the bush, one deployment there, and then from there I went to Sigonella. I went to the Sigonella Public Affairs Office as a second class. I was there from 2013 to 2016, and I put on first class there. And
what was it like living there?
That was awesome. So Sicily is just south of Naples.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there as an E5, put on E6, so a little bit more funding to travel. And so my wife and I were married, no kids, and had this income that we were able to travel a little bit more. So we were able to go to Dublin, we were able to go to Munich, Berlin, London, Paris, Barcelona.
Wow.
We went to Venice for Carnival, Naples, Rome so many times. Just kind of everywhere.
That's neat.
All throughout Europe. And that tour was like just great for us. We're in our like middle to late 20s and we're able to travel even more.
Yeah.
From there, I applied for the Syracuse program, the military photojournalism, military visual journalism program,
mm-hmm.
Which I did the photography portion of that course at the time.
Okay, cool.
So spent a year up at Syracuse University attending classes up there.
What did you think of that? I've heard such mixed reviews.
I enjoyed it because it was right at my 10-year mark. And so it was kind of like a mental break from the military. I'm in civilian clothes, just going to class. Didn't really have to think about the military.
Yeah.
I never went to college prior to that. I'd done online courses, but hadn't done anything seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, being able to focus on class full-time, attend this program, it was great for me at that time.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. So then Syracuse...
From Syracuse, I went to the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower out of Norfolk. So my second carrier, I'm going there as an E6 to be the lead petty officer.
Wow.
And I'm there from 2017 into late 2020.
Okay.
So I get there, they've just gotten back from a deployment. We went into the yards a little bit longer than we anticipated. Came out of the yards, did our workups, and then we deployed in January of 2020.
Oh.
Which was right before COVID, right before the pandemic really hit. And from there, we did a deployment of 207 days with no port visits. So we left Norfolk in January, had our assessment down off the coast of Florida. Everybody flew off. We headed over to Europe, went through the Straits of Gibraltar, went through the Suez Canal.
What's it like doing that?
Those are interesting days because those are like the one day that we had cell phone service.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was trying to reconnect their Spotify, reconnect their Apple Music, so that they could have music on the ship again. Otherwise,
yeah.
You had to have like an older iPod. Like I had an old iPod Nano,
mm-hmm.
that had music that I had actually paid for, put on it, and
yeah.
didn't have to connect to the internet to keep using.
So I have a question with that. So like I have Apple Music right now, but I have songs downloaded to my phone. Did those work since they're downloaded to my phone and I don't need Wi-Fi to listen to them?
So yeah, after about 30 days, you lose access to all the music in your iCloud, in your Spotify. Like people had workarounds, but it only bought them like an extra day. And then once you were at like 30 days with no internet connection, that's when everybody lost access to music. So I had like an iPod Nano that I had music on. People had hard drives with actual hard downloaded music, and we were able to use iTunes to like add that to that. So having that little bit of music helped, but it was a very limited catalog compared to like all the music that we had downloaded prior to deployment.
So do you have internet on the things because you have to use your computers?
So for internet, it's like the official like military system. So you can't plug your iPods into that.
Yeah.
So you can't connect to iTunes through that.
Gotcha.
So there's no internet for us for like our personal laptops or game systems or any of that.
What about like downloading like books or like Audibles?
I don't know how that works after 30 days.
Okay.
You could try that like... because you purchased those with credit, so I imagine you'd still have them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what happens when you disconnect from Wi-Fi for 30 days.
Interesting. So then when you hit like a port visit, I know obviously the Eisenhower didn't have port visits because of that, but I'm saying like when you hit a port visit and you're able to connect, that helps your phone.
Right. And like anytime we were like, if we were close enough to land, we would try to connect so that we would connect to it. And you
would, what Wi-Fi would you try and connect to? Just like anything?
Just whatever country's cellular. So we're going through the Straits of Gibraltar. We were bouncing back and forth between like Spain and Morocco's like cell towers, and then through the Suez. The CEO would call, like, okay, if you need to authenticate your phone, go up now from this time to this time, and go up, get your stuff, and go back up underneath.
Interesting. Because you just needed actual cellular service, not necessarily Wi-Fi. Like, in the middle of the ocean, you don't have any of that.
Right, that's all gone.
Okay.
I have heard of, like, on, one of the carriers on the West Coast, they have an antenna that they can attach that does give them Wi-Fi into their shops, like, for certain hours. So I imagine they didn't lose access to their music the same way that we did.
Gotcha.
But that's just
That's like not something I've even thought about.
Yeah. That was just one capability that was like bouncing between all the carriers out there.
Wow. Okay, so no port visits on that ship for 207 days, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So we set the record for 207 days, which have you talked about beer days before? Have you heard about beer days? So on ships, traditionally, every 45 days that you're out to sea without a port visit, you're authorized to get a beer day, which means everybody on the ship is entitled to exactly two beers. They'll do a barbecue with it. They'll have games, movie night, stuff like that. Normally, you see maybe one of those per deployment because you'll have like a mission that keeps you out for like 50 days or 60 days. But we, being out 207, we qualified for four beer days.
Wow.
And it was funny because like the first one we were excited about and like, okay, maybe we'll still get a port visit. We're still like optimistic.
We had no idea what COVID even was.
No. We hit day 45, I think around March. So right when things really started to lock down is when we got our first beer day.
Okay.
Which was in like Sixth Fleet area. So we were in the Mediterranean, nice weather, before we went down to like the Middle East and did most of our floating around in circles down there. By the fourth
beer, did anybody get COVID on the ship?
We had nobody on and nobody off from when the pandemic was declared until near the end of the deployment. They finally sent people off.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to send people off because we weren't going to get replacements on.
Yeah.
So
COVID was really technically never on your boat.
Correct. Until we came back from deployment.
And for me, that's like interesting to think about, like, when did it travel to America? You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying is so interesting to think about.
I mean, probably when like planes and stuff were going from everywhere, like there's free travel.
Yeah, like, you know, but that's everywhere. What I'm saying. Like, it's interesting to think that like you guys left in January. Because like I know some people that were like sure that they got it in January because they're like, I was so sick with COVID symptoms per se in January.
Before we knew what it was.
Yeah, and so it's just interesting to like to think about. Okay, so four beer days. Wow.
So yeah, by the fourth beer day,
you were like, I don't even want a beer day.
We didn't. People just went up to the flight deck, grabbed their two beers, drank them, and went back to their like racks to go sleep.
Yeah.
And so by the end of it, they were like, we were just kind of like, let's go home. Like at that point, we were like 3 weeks from going home, and we were just like, okay, cool. I'm not.
And
gonna
how does
down
that
much.
Work? How do you know? Like, how early in advance do they tell you this is when you think we're getting home?
Originally, we were supposed to go home in June.
Okay.
So we were only supposed to go on, like, a five-month deployment. I understand. I'm doing air quotes. And I realize we're on not a visual medium, but we're a five-month deployment. And then come, like, April or May, they're like, okay, we don't know how long this is going to last. Yeah. No other carrier can come and relieve us. We're going to stay out longer and longer. And so I think we only got extended once. And they said we should be back around August, September.
Okay.
And so it really took figuring out like everything else. So our ship was out with no relief in sight
because
other ships were in the shipyard. The Theodore Roosevelt was stuck in Guam because they had their cases of COVID.
Yeah.
And so we were waiting on the Nimitz eventually came out, and they had to figure out how to do that to take a crew from America to make sure they didn't bring COVID out with them or how to quarantine them. So they had to figure out all their logistics.
And isn't the Nimitz out of San Diego?
I think Washington.
Okay.
Officially Washington.
So they went from Washington over
to the Middle East.
Okay.
So East Coast and West Coast can both go, like,
we're
a worldwide deployable force. They can both go to the Fifth Fleet area.
And relieve you.
And relieve us. But the day we saw them, we're like, oh, thank God. Like, you know, like, we had been out there. We saw the Truman at one point. We relieved them on station. They left.
The Truman just got back from their deployment, and I was at a small boy, like, homecoming, mm-hmm. and the CO said 210 days.
Mm-hmm. Did they not have any port visits?
They had a couple port visits, but they were out for forever because they were waiting on relief from the Bush, and then with the Ukraine thing happened, mm-hmm. they were like, you have to stay out here.
Right, that happens a lot. Like, you never know what's going to happen in the world when you're on a deployment like that.
But yeah, they left in December, and mm-hmm. they got back in September.
Yep, that I think 6 to 9 months is usually the window that you never know, and it can go longer than that.
Yeah.
Way back when, 2001, the Lincoln was on their way home in mm-hmm. September.
Oh my gosh.
And then 9/11 happened, and they turned right back around. They didn't know how much longer they were going to be out there, and I think it was over a year, like from start to finish that they were out, but not like after that.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if this is, like, bad to say, but it's, like, in a situation like that, mm-hmm. I feel like you have a little bit more oomph mm-hmm. that they have, like, on that ship. They're like, America just got attacked. We're ready to fight. Like, you have a little bit more of that where, like, for your case, COVID, you're like, everyone's struggling back at home. This mm-hmm. is miserable. I'm stuck on a ship. I have never been off of it for 200 days. We're not at war right now in the sense, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have other, like, external factors helping motivate you like you did necessarily if you're, like, on the Lincoln in 2001.
Right. We were out there for, like, it felt like an undetermined amount of time.
Yeah.
And things were happening back home that still to this day, like, I don't comprehend certain things about how people survived in COVID time frame. So my wife talked about, like, everybody was hoarding toilet paper and paper towels. Nope, we didn't have that problem. We just had our normal ship stuff.
Yeah.
We still
You guys still do, like, unwraps?
Yep. We still had, like, a weekly ship come alongside us and give us, like, supplies, food, and stuff.
Okay.
So that would still happen on a regular basis that we still had food, like, we still had to eat.
Yeah.
I don't think we had any effects from that. I think
what's
at one point...
ship life food, like, ship food, like?
It's fine. It's cafeteria, like, good and bad. The chief's mess on board the ship typically has the best food.
Okay.
The wardroom has the second best food. And then the main mess decks that I ate on last, on the Eisenhower, had the least best quality of food.
Okay.
And that's just with how the manning works on board the ship.
Yeah.
The food isn't the worst thing in the world. You can look it up online and you can see, like, great food, terrible food. There's food.
Yeah. And then you just have, like, I don't know, I've heard a lot of things about, like, getting close with the CSs because they're able to make you, like...
You always want a friend. You always want a friend who's a chef. You want a friend who works in logistics, a friend that works in admin. You want to network with those people because you're going to need those people to take care of yourself, but more importantly, take care of your sailors. You never know when you're going to need to call in a favor, like, hey, this person has this going on. How can we help?
Yeah.
And you always want to be friendly with those people. I'm not saying just seek them out, but they know. They know people are looking out, like, trying to be friends with them.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so that's cool. So then you finished at the Eisenhower.
Yep, so I left the Eisenhower in September of 2020, which COVID's still happening. My wife and I moved across the country to San Diego, where I go to Navy Public Affairs Support Element West as their training LCPO. Well, their training LPO. I pick up chief there, go through chief season.
Okay, can you talk about chief season? Like, to a certain degree.
No.
You can't talk about it at all?
No, I'm just kidding. I went through chief season there during COVID, which was interesting.
Yeah.
I went through with the base, Naval Base Coronado, chief's mess. And it was me and six others, so we had a group of seven.
Nice.
I had just gotten there in September. Results came out in November. And so we went through season. Typically, season's a six-week process. Because we went over all the holidays and we had to do Zoom and all this stuff, it went a little bit longer, so we went 10 weeks in season.
Oh, wow.
So we didn't finish up till, like, late January. It was late January by the time we actually, like, got pinned. So that was a unique situation because while all the chiefs in the mess had gone through their own season, nobody's season was like ours. So we had to figure out what are we allowed to do? Like, what's the letter of the law? What can we do? How can we, like, adjust? And they figured it out and put us through a pretty good season for what we could have.
Yeah.
We did have somebody who had a close contact with COVID, and so we had to go to Zoom for a week and a half of training till we all got
out. So is the trainings, like, how to be a good chief, what your role is going to be, mm-hmm. stuff like that?
Yeah, that's all included, part of it. Similar to some of the lessons that we learned at OCS,
mm-hmm.
there's, like, official, like, here's how you work with your junior officers training. Here's how to write evals. There's some of that. And then as a chief select, you're expected to give training to the mess as well, that you are supposed, because you need to learn how to lead and talk to your peers.
Yeah. Okay.
And so we would have all sorts of training sessions like that. So
then you do like runs and workouts and
a lot of physical fitness stuff. I think we had a little bit less than a normal season.
Do you have stuff where like, I don't know if you've ever heard of like how like fraternities have like pledge season where like they have to go. So like they'll be under somebody that's already in the fraternity and then like that you're a freshman and you want to be joining that fraternity. So they'll be like, okay, you need to text my girlfriend every single morning, like happy birthday or like, how are you doing? Or like send her a picture. And like each person in fraternity has like a pledge under them that says like, you're going to go do this silly task every day for me.
There's a purpose to everything.
Yeah. So I'm just saying like, then it was just kind of like, will you do this stupid thing for a little while?
Is there
things like that?
There are things like that to varying degrees. So for example, a friend of mine is going through chief season this year.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted him to get to know more chiefs in his area within his like job field. And so me and another person, a friend of ours who's now a senior chief, me and her came up with like, here's people we want you to talk to. But we just gave him the phone numbers and said, this person's on the West Coast, this person's on the East Coast, this person's in Hawaii. So at least he knew what time to call. So he wasn't waking somebody up at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
So we said, you need to call these people and have a discussion about leadership and ask them this or that. And so there were some silly questions in there. But our goal was for him to get to know people that mm-hmm. he either hasn't talked to in 15 years or just get to know new people that he might need to work with in the future.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so for us, our task had like purpose.
No, yeah.
Are there silly little things in there? Yeah, there's some silly stuff too. But for the most part.
But that's like what it is.
That's what it is. So you want it to be helpful. Like you don't want it. It's not hazing.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be demeaning. It's supposed to build them up so that they can integrate into the chief's mess and be a member of the chief's mess, be the brother or sister that they need in the chief's mess. You've been selected for it. They want you to be ready for it when you get accepted.
Cool. Okay, so then you're chief, you're at NPACE.
Mm-hmm.
Where was your head at with becoming an officer?
So I hadn't fully thought of the officer route yet. I didn't have a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, while I was in chief season, I was still taking classes.
Okay.
So the first 5 weeks of season, I was finishing up like 2 or 3 classes.
Wow.
And then I got pinned, had a little bit of a breather, and then I was like, okay, I only need, I think, 4 classes. Let me finish this degree. That was just the immediate target.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a chief, I was just like doing my job, going to work, and then after work, get off. Okay, I need to do classes. I was doing all online stuff, and I was just working so hard. I was like so close. It took me the entirety of 14 years to get my degree. And so that finally happens. I get it in July of 2021, and I'm just like, yes, I finally did it. Okay, now what?
Mm-hmm.
There are programs the Navy has to get your master's degree on the enlisted side. So I started looking into those because I was like, okay, let me just continue the education route. A friend of mine came to town, Brian, and him, my wife and I were walking over to pizza one day while he was in town. And I was just like, yeah, I got this degree, but I don't know what I want to do with it. Maybe I'll apply to be an officer. And my wife's like, do it. I was like, what? She's like, who do you think would not support your officer package? You need to put this in. And I was like, oh man, you're right. I got to do this. She's like, who do you think's not going to support you? Give me names.
Yeah. Way to go, Lindsay.
Yeah. And she just like encouraged me. She's like, you're going to get the help you need. People will support you through this.
Yeah.
So do it. That way you're not going to not apply and then always wonder, well, what if I'd gone this route?
Yeah.
And so she encouraged me to do it. I went to my master chief, told him, went to my OIC, Julie, who we both know, and was like, hey, I want to put in this package. Will you help me? She's like, absolutely. And she's like, we can do an appraisal board. We can get this person in. We're going to get all this stuff together. You got to do this, this, and this. And gave me like a to-do list. And so I started getting my stuff together. She started organizing the panel that was going to eventually appraise me. And it was awesome to have that kind of support.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And then I went to the panel and they didn't support me. No, you know what happened. So you and I went up to the same panel.
People are going to be they're going to be so confused why I'm laughing.
So you and I, so we both knew Julie, and she sets up this panel where it's her at the time, Captain Perry, and
who's now Rear Admiral Perry.
Who's now Rear Admiral Perry and Commander Schwegman.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of them were going to appraise multiple candidates.
Six
of us. And so we all had to go in. We had to give them
our package,
a portfolio, a package. Yeah. And they look at it. We all come in for interviews. And you and I didn't even meet that day.
No.
But you got their appraisals. they chose to only, like, they only gave, like, one recommendation to one person, like, put all their eggs in that basket, and it was you, not me. I'm not salty about it. It's fine.
You're not salty about it, but you bring it up, I don't know, once a week?
Because I look at you, I just want to, No, the reason it happened was, it made sense, is that I already did have some other network connections that I could reach out to.
Yeah.
And so I reached out to four of my previous PAOs from the Eisenhower, and they all were like, absolutely, what do you need? And they, bam, 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 I had that within a week.
That's awesome.
And that was connections that I would have had that you wouldn't have had.
For sure.
And so I think they made the right choice in supporting your package because you were a 10 out of 10 and I was a 9.9.
I can't believe she said that to you.
They made the right choice in supporting your package over mine. We'll end at that.
Well, that's kind. I didn't know anybody. Like, it was, yeah. I was the only civilian that boarded.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy because, I mean, I've told you this story and I've told it on here, but, like, I almost didn't even show up to those interviews. I was so afraid.
Yeah, that you mentioned Kate had to convince you to, like, get off the couch.
Yeah, I was so afraid that they were going to be like, why the heck are you even applying for this? Like, you are not qualified for this at all, you know? And then I remember, like, I went to my workout in the morning and I was like, I don't want to go. And my personal trainer was like, you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kate was like, you're going. And I was like, well, the bright side is, they're only picking one person, so if it's not me, I'm done. I don't have to, like, live with, well, what happens in November? Like, I was like, this pit in my stomach that is constantly here is gone if they just don't pick me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, well, the worst thing they can do is just not pick me.
And that was the same thing for me, was I needed to at least put in a package. They tell me no, and then I could be like, okay, cool. I was not qualified, or I was not the most qualified person for that job.
Yeah.
And then I could move on with my life. Then I would have been happy being a chief petty officer and continuing on that route.
Yeah.
Had I not been selected, maybe I would have put in again. Maybe I wouldn't have. But it was just the right place, right time, the right people in my corner that got my package through.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same thing for you. It's just the right place, right time, the right board members, and you just slightly outqualified me.
I didn't even outqualify you. I was the only person that didn't know other people. You know what I mean? And, like, for them to know that, like, you could still get the
required documents.
Yeah, and, like, I think for me, like, it's such a testament that, like, I feel like sometimes you have this thing where, like, I sometimes feel like, I'm a civilian. Like, I didn't know anything. And it's like, people in the military, if you have the qualifications, want you there and want you to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And they will figure out another way if there's also another person that might have other connections to also get them. You know, like, they're not going to favor one or the other. Like, if you are both qualified, you both deserve it, it will happen.
Exactly. And we got lucky, too, because you and I both got picked up. We had two other people picked up for PAO in our class at OCS. And it was just awesome.
It was a big pickup year because I was told they picked up 2 to 4 people a year.
And we had 8 selected our year, and 7 of them made it through, like, through OCS. But we're jumping forward. So back to, after I don't get the appraisal, I call in some favors. I call in some favors, and people backed me up, wrote me letters of recommendation, wrote me the appraisals I needed, put my package together, and sent it off. And then around this time, my wife and I were expecting our first child, Kanan, and he was due November 5th or 6th.
Okay.
He was due early November. And then we were hoping for a Halloween baby, but he stayed in a little longer than he should have. But it's totally fine. He came out happy and healthy. But right before Lindsay delivered Kanan, I got the phone call. I was sitting in my office, and somebody calls a quarterdeck. The person on watch comes back and says, Chief, we got Chinfo. Chinfo's on the phone for you. And I was like, what? And I run up there. I was like, hey, good morning, sir. How are you doing? And he's like, yo, do you know why I'm calling? I was like, well, yeah, I got a 50-50 shot about why you're calling. And he's like, we'd love for you to go to OCS and join the PAO community. Welcome to the wardroom. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. So,
oh, my gosh.
It was an exciting day. That was November 4th. And then Kanan was born 6 days later on November 10th. So, it was an exciting time. We were in the middle of the subsequent chief season after mine. And so I got like a little bit of like razzing, I guess, from the other chiefs. Like, yeah. Got joked on, but people were legitimately happy for me.
That's wonderful.
For that path. And it was just, it ended up being the path that made the most sense for me and my family at that phase of our lives.
Yeah.
So got selected, picked up for OCS in November. I asked to go to OCS as late as possible, so I wasn't leaving my wife at home with a newborn baby.
Yeah.
It ended up working out that they delayed me till May, and then I got pulled forward to April.
Which is funny, because we met at that luncheon in December.
We did.
And we didn't really talk at all.
Nope.
And in my defense, they were like, oh, he's going in a later class. And right. So I was like, okay, like, you know, we're at the opposite ends of the table, and I kind of was just like, I was the only one in civilian clothes because it was a Navy lunch, and I was like, I don't know anybody here. I'm just going to sit here and eat my burger. You know, I mean, like, I was talking to people at mine at the table, but I wasn't feeling, like, the most confident to, like, branch out at that time, you know?
I remember that lunch was exciting for me because Julie was walking me around and be like, oh, hey, this is Chief Curtis. He's going to be going to OCS in May, and then he's going to be a PAO, and it felt very welcoming.
Yeah.
And then I still went to, like...
the most welcoming community. Like, I feel like we are so lucky.
It really is. Because I went to, like, two or three more of those lunches. And people were like, oh, man, I can't wait for you to go through OCS. You're going to have a blast. It's going to suck. And then you can't wait for you to be a part of the community. I was like, this is cool. Like, this is a welcoming, awesome community. At least at those lunches, they were nice. And so, yeah, that was November. We had lunch in December. And then I was going to go in May, and then it got moved up forward to April. And so I actually ended up leaving for OCS a day before my wife's birthday.
Aww.
And she wasn't a fan of that, but she's indifferent about birthdays, I think. But it was just like kind of a rough time. It was like Easter weekend, and get there, and class up, and you and I go through class 1-3, TAC 2-2, which was an interesting time.
For sure. I definitely think, like, thinking back about it, it's just like, it almost feels like a dream. Like, I'm like, I cannot believe that this was my year. You know what I mean? Like, and it was crazy. And I think for me, like, I was so grateful. And I think I told you this, but I was supposed to be 1-0 TAC 2-3.
Right.
Or 2-2, excuse me. And so I was supposed to be in the class that was over us when we checked in. Mm-hmm. But I wrote them a letter and I was like, I can't go due to my husband's schedule and everything.
Because Cade was getting out of the Marines.
Yeah, you know.
And you kind of wanted to, like, ease that
exactly
transition.
And so they're like, all right, just go in April. And I was like, oh, thank you. And so for me, I was so grateful that I ended up in a class where there was three other PAOs. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for that to happen, I feel like was so beneficial for all of us.
Mm-hmm. I that was huge because I know you remember this, but I failed, was it First Friday? No.
RLP.
I failed the room lock personnel inspection. And so the next day I had to have a re-inspect. So the night of my failure, I'm just like in my head, mentally just like, this sucks. This is terrible. I failed. I don't want to roll. I don't want to get kicked out. I'm not going to quit. Like I told Lindsay, I'm not coming back from OCS unless it's with an ensign bar.
Yeah.
And so I fail. My roommate, Horace, was like, okay, cool. What do we have to do to get you ready?
Yeah.
And then you, Burkett, Josh, all come to the room, come to my room and start getting everything squared away. You're quizzing me. Somebody else is helping fold my t-shirts because they trash your room.
Oh, yeah. They trash absolutely it. And then they expect you to, like, pass the next day. But you've been preparing for the last week on your room.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden you got to do that in one day.
Yeah. And so...
And I don't think you failed on knowledge.
No.
You just had, Gunnery Sergeant Clark?
I had somebody who... He had a very high standard. he had a very high physical standard for his ROP. He's getting ready for retirement. He's retired now. Congratulations to him. But he came in from his terminal leave to mess with me.
Yeah.
Like, well, not me. Like, it wasn't personal. But that's just how it felt. He picked my room and...
And he is a very scary individual.
Very intimidating.
Like, even in civilian clothes could make me piss myself. Like, he was so scary. And, like... Most of the staff members, like, even if they, like, were annoyed that they were, like, in on their off day or something, like, if you, like, you're taught to greet them at OCS. Mm-hmm. And so normally staff members would be like, hello, like, carry on, you know, and stuff like that. And he would just scream at you to shut F up. Is and you just be like, I don't even know what to respond to that. Like,
yes,
I just, like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, it's so, and you're like, who peed in your Cheerios this morning?
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, he was definitely rough around the edges, but. I failed. That was on me. You guys came and helped prep. Next morning, you all went to PT, and then me and I think we had like 8 or 9 other people who had failed.
Mm-hmm.
We do a re-inspect, and I get someone else, they come in, I pass, and when I'm done, they're like, close your door, you're good, cool. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, thank God. Like, oh my gosh. Like, I was so happy that I wasn't getting rolled. As soon as PT is over, I get a knock on the door, and it's you, Josh, and Lacey. He's just at the door, like, are you good, man? I was like, I'm good. Like, yes! Like,
yeah.
That was such a high moment for me. Like, in the same way the lunches were, like, so inviting. The fact that I had you three who, like, we'd only known each other, like, 3 weeks. And
not even
that well.
Yeah.
We didn't even know each other that well at that point. And you were still, like, invested in my success. And that was just such a cool moment for me that I don't think I'll forget.
Oh, I love that.
And then, yeah, the next 10 weeks after that were still terrible.
But see, like, I don't know. Like, I want to say that they were terrible, but, like, my mom asked me, like, today when I was texting her, she asked, like, how our week's gone. And I've told her, like, how it's actually gone, you know. And she was like, well, it's not as bad as, like, OCS. And I was like, I would rather be back at OCS right now. And I was like, I know that sounds so bad to say. And it's, and I'm sure that as we go on here at DinPost, it's going to get better. But I think that, like, the things that made OCS bearable, we don't have here, you know? Mm-hmm. Even when you were struggling at OCS, we went back to our rooms every day and we had that camaraderie.
Yeah.
I could show up to my friend's room, we could talk, we could study, like, I had those people here.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, yeah, it's nice to be in a hotel and have that and, like, have your own personal space. Like, when you're frustrated or, like, struggling, you're not, like, forced to kind of deal with it with your friends.
Right.
You don't have that, like, automatic camaraderie.
No, I definitely don't feel that yet. Like, we haven't clicked with our class here as quickly as we had to there.
Yeah.
Because there you're forced through these stressful things, and so your only outlet are the people around you because you don't have your phone, you don't have your own personal space, like, you're sharing a room with somebody.
And I think it's also different here with it being joint.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely a new environment for us. Like, I've worked with other people, like, from other branches before, but I haven't been in an academic setting like this since A school 15 years ago.
Yeah, so it's just been interesting, but, yeah, no, I loved OCS and the fact that, like, I loved our friend group,
mm-hmm.
I loved all the shenanigans we got into,
mm-hmm.
like, it was just a fun in time for me, and I don't know if you feel this way because you didn't do, like, typical college, because I didn't either.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was like, I'm getting that college experience that I never got.
Yeah, I can see that. I see that point.
That's, like, what I was telling Adrapi one day. I was like, I never went and, like, lived in a dorm. I did for one
mm-hmm.
semester, and it was awful. But I was like, I never got that, like, typical 4 years of college.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, for me, like, I'm living with my friends every day. Like, this is so fun, you know?
I think it's so interesting, too, because when I went through boot camp, I don't know if I had a chip on my shoulder or what it was, but there were all these people who were like, yeah, we're going through our class. We're class, I think we're 052. Class 052, we're going to be friends forever. Once we go to the fleet, we're all going to try and get stationed together. And I was just like, no, we're not. That's dumb. We're never going to see each other again. And I've ran into, like, one of my best friends was in my brother division,
mm-hmm.
Cody. Him and I went to school together. Like, we had boot camp. We went to A school together. And, like, we were friends to this day.
Wow.
And he is, like, my one takeaway from boot camp. And then our friend Gabby is the other takeaway from, like, DinPost. And now, like, they were here again 15 years later. There were people that were in the classes, like, right ahead of me, right behind me, that we've kind of grown up together through the ranks. And I do legitimately know them from A school, but
wow.
not from boot camp. I ran into some random people from boot camp and was like, do I know you from somewhere? And we figured it out eventually.
Yeah.
But, I had a very negative view of boot camp. And boot camp was you go for 8 weeks, you'll get through it.
Mm-hmm.
You show up, you will pass if you just give a little bit of effort. OCS was night and day different from that. You had to try.
You had to try a lot.
You had to try a lot. Every day was trying. And so I felt, in my opinion, that OCS was way more difficult than boot camp and was more difficult than my chief season.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's chief season is different, but I just felt that mine was so much different.
Yeah.
That OCS was the hardest thing I have been through personally.
Mm-hmm. So then you finish OCS.
Mm-hmm.
You're now an ensign.
Yep. I graduated with you July 15th. We all go our separate ways, but different than boot camp, it was like, okay, cool. I can't wait to see these people again. Like, I knew that you and Lacey were going to be here for PAX Q. Like, we're going to be here for this course together. I live, like, right around the corner from a friend of ours. And I've seen him, like, walking around the neighborhood, and I still text to a couple of people from there. And I'm more invested in these
yeah.
people that are around. And it's interesting, too, because I'm at 15 years and I have at least 10 years that I have to serve in order to retire, whereas you're looking at 20 years.
Yeah.
And other people right out of college are looking at that long-term 20 years, and I'm almost at 20, but I only have 10 left.
Yeah.
You know, so we're at different points in our life, but it's still like OCS was such a unifying experience.
Yeah.
But there are definitely people that if I never see again, so well.
Okay, so what would you say is like the biggest difference now being an ensign versus a chief?
I haven't had any like clear cut moments yet where I'm like, I'm an ensign, I was a chief, I should be entitled to more respect than I'm getting. I haven't had a moment like that yet.
Mm-hmm. Do you like getting saluted at the gate?
It's weird.
I bet you.
It's so weird.
Okay, I have a question for that. Do you wear your cover inside your car and salute back?
I do not.
Okay, I don't either. But I was in the car with somebody else the other day, and they were like, "Yeah, you're supposed to put your cover on and salute back." And I'm like, "What?"
I give them like a little like wave, like thank you.
Yeah,
like,
I always wait for them to like cut it, and then I say like thank you, and I'm like have a great day or you know something. But like I've never once put my my cover on and been
car.
Like. I thought you weren't supposed to do that.
We should look this regulation up, but I don't think people do that. I think they got rid of the thing that you're supposed to wear your cover in your car, because you're technically covered inside your vehicle.
That's what I'm saying. I don't even wear pumping gas. I'm covered.
Yeah, and I'm at a command that we don't really wear covers, like, at the command.
Mm-hmm.
And so outside, like, I didn't have salutes. Like, I got saluted at the gate in my car, but I was not rendering a salute back, and mm-hmm. so that was weird to me. I had a friend of mine, Joel, he came up. He was my senior chief on the Eisenhower. He came up to graduation, and he was my first salute.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
That's so cool.
And then he was getting ready to retire at the time. And so in August or September?
August.
It was August. I flew from San Diego to Norfolk to his retirement ceremony to be his presiding officer as an ensign. So
that's
my
so cool.
First and second salute were both to Joel. Those are the first two I had. I didn't have anywhere else that I was covered where I had to salute somebody.
Yeah.
And that was so bizarre to me that I went like a month and a half without saluting anyone.
Yeah, no, I feel like obviously my sailors, and then like if I go to the commissary or
you
stuff like that.
Stuff, yeah.
But sometimes I like forget
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, oh, and then like I feel bad because I'm like, while I was at OCS, you're like on the prowl. Like your
right.
eyes are just looking everywhere. And so, like, now sometimes I forget. I felt really bad. I was walking home from a homecoming, and me and Nico were talking. And I totally, like, out of the corner of my eyes, I turn. I see a sailor salute me, but I'm, like, already past. And I, like, turn around. I'm, like, I felt so bad because, like, you could, like, he was here. I know the people listening can't see this, but at least Curtis can see. He's right here, and we're walking past him.
Mm-hmm.
And he just does, like, he jumps to attention really quickly. But I didn't catch it because I'm almost, like, slightly turned. And I felt so bad because I was, like, oh, my gosh, like, poor kid, you know, and like I had a guy at the gate one morning. He checks my ID. He sees it. He literally like hops to us and he's like, "Welcome aboard, man. Have a great day." And it was the cutest thing.
I had a weird window. They hadn't processed our paperwork from OCS to get new IDs, and so I had an ID that said chief. So if I was in civilian clothes, I'd go through the gate and they'd be like, "All right, thanks, chief." And I'm like, "He doesn't know. That's fine."
Yeah.
And then it just kept happening. And then. Once I like had to start going to work after taking some leave, I'm going to work wearing my ensign bar,
mm-hmm.
and they're checking my ID. They say chief, and if they do or don't see the tab, I don't hold it against them. But some of them would salute, some of them would be like, "Thanks, chief." "Oh, I'm sorry, sir." And they would like panic. I was like, "Okay, I need to get a new ID."
Yeah,
I don't want that to be this weird gray zone. And even once I got like my new ID, it still felt like it feels strange. Like I don't know. I don't think it's. Are we still recording?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I was like, wait, did we stop? I don't think it's fully hit me and set in. Like, I haven't had moments where I'm like, this is it. But it took me a while, even after being pinned as a chief, to, like, feel that I was a chief.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was wearing the rank. I had the ID. I had the email that said it. I signed my emails very respectfully, Chief Curtis. Like, it was all there, but it didn't start coming to me until, like, it just became regular that people would come to my office and be like, they'd, like, knock on the door and be like, "Hey, chief, you got a moment?" And, like, once I just got, used to that, I was like, "Oh, okay, this is it." And I haven't had that yet because I've worked in my offices. Like, I've worked with, like, my group of people, but I haven't worked with people outside of our office.
Yeah.
So I'm not having regular interactions where I'm even hearing my own name. Like, I'm getting sirs, but I'm not hearing, like, Ensign Curtis.
Yeah.
And
we're only here for 2 years at this, like, at this step. And so that part's still not, like, quite setting in.
No, I definitely think it's interesting. Okay, so then to finish, so we're here at Dinfos right now, mm-hmm. doing our PAXQ class. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the goal is to graduate.
Yeah, that's every military school, just to survive.
What are some of your goals, like, in the near future? You know, once you get mm-hmm. back to your job, what do you, like, say, like, 2023, what are you hoping to accomplish?
2023, we have some qualification stuff that we have to get, like our independent duty public affairs officer mm-hmm. qualification. I definitely want to hit that hard. We're going to have this class and we're going to learn so much about being a PAO.
Yeah.
I really just want to comprehend what our job is exactly mm-hmm. and finding like the left and right lateral of what we're allowed to do. And just kind of experience that. My department head, Commander Morgan, like her and I had a talk before I left to come here. And she said, like, yeah, if you hear about a homecoming happening with Surf Pack, I'm going to send you to that so that you can get that experience. If a carrier is coming back, you're going to go there and help Air Pack out. Like, it sounds like she wants to farm me out to, like, kind of the local public affairs offices.
That's good.
So that I can get other experience other than our office. And so I'm looking forward to that process. She said I kind of have, like, not free reign, but there's a lot of opportunity to kind of make the job what I want it to be. And so I'm excited for that. Other personal goals, my wife and I, we have our son. He's turning a year next month.
That's so exciting.
And so just being around for his, like, next year, because that was something we knew was going to happen, was that of 2022, of my son's first year of his life, I end up being away from him for 5 months.
Yeah.
Like, that was my motivation to get through OCS in exactly 13 weeks, was I'm going to see my son.
Yeah.
And then now through PAXQ, like, there's not that risk of getting rolled back. Yeah. Not the same inherent risk there was at OCS. But getting through here, getting home to my family. And so 2023, I want to be present. I want to be more present with them. I was signed up for a marathon for while we were here, but that's not going to happen. I deferred that to next year, so I think adequately training for a marathon would be a good goal. I just got tickets to go to San Diego Comic-Con, so I need to get tickets for my wife once she's eligible, and taking our son to that, like, for the first time.
It'll be really fun.
Like, not a personal, that's a personal goal, not a professional goal, but...
But both are important.
Right, and so going to Comic-Con with the two of them, and, like, having that, like, experience, like, the nerd culture, like, I don't know, I'm excited for that. That's a 2023 goal. We have programs to get our master's degrees. I'd like to just set myself up for that when that time comes and I'm competitive for that.
Mm-hmm. So talking about that, what is your preferred, like, career ribbon looking like?
So I'd like to stay in San Diego to keep the family kind of stable, mm-hmm. like, geographically, and for at least one more tour after where I'm at now. And then from there, go to the master's program at San Diego State University.
Maybe we'd be able to do it that same year, which would be cool.
That I think that would be possible. So we'll both be at our current job for the next 2 years. Like, as long as we don't make any adjustments, you and I will kind of rotate at the same time.
Yeah.
But so taking another job in San Diego,
like, is a year. Second job. So, or you're talking about, like, if you went to, like, Surf Pack or something.
Right. So stay in San Diego. So be there for a total of 4 years consecutive, then go to SDSU, and then from there, I'd like to go overseas. Yeah. Europe would be, like, kind of the primary. Like, I'd like to go back to Naples, because there's a lot of jobs there for PAOs.
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be an easy one to get, and then be able to travel there, because at that point, we'll be lieutenants.
Yeah, which is crazy.
I think that'd just be a good time. Like, by then, my son would be 4 or 5, and go there, travel, let him kind of see the world, like, give him opportunities that I did not have as a child.
Yeah.
Go there. Japan would also be cool, though, too. Side note, you need to look into traveling to Japan right now. It's so cheap.
Really?
From San Diego, it's $1,200 round trip. That's how much it costs to get here.
That's crazy.
If you, like, from where I'm at, if we drove up to LAX, there are tickets for direct from LAX to Tokyo for $500. This is a total aside from the podcast, but right now it is stupid cheap to go over there. I was like, dang, I would love to, like, go travel over there for as cheap as that is.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah. Overseas would be good, I think, as a lieutenant. I don't really know what's possible at that rank for, mm-hmm. like, jobs and stuff. I'd like to make 04 before I, like, retire.
Do you want to do, like, your whole, like, 04 mile tour? Or you want to, like, because you'll hit 04.
Roughly at 25 years.
Yeah.
I would be, at this point, looking that far out, I would love to go back to a carrier and do a department head tour.
Yeah.
Whether just that's like my final round tour. Round it
out, you know, to like just have right. that experience to be like, hey, I started here yes. as an E3, E4.
E4 on the carrier, but yeah.
Yeah, and now I'm an O4. Like, yeah,
just bring it kind of full circle like, that'd be for a career.
Cool.
But I know like going there, they look for people to go there and then be eligible for O5. And we'll see, like, if I get out at 25 years in a day or if I push out to 30.
Yeah.
I'm open to whichever. Like, it's a career at this point. And so if I'm at 15 now, I got to do 10 more. And then if I have to do 5 after that.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think I'm only halfway.
That's crazy.
Or I'm already halfway, you know?
Yeah. Wow, well, that's so exciting. I feel like it's going to be so fun to kind of watch where our paths go, and mm-hmm. hopefully they cross again working, or at least maybe I'll relieve you or something.
Yeah. No, I think it's possible. If you ever want to come back to San Diego, they'll have you.
Well, I don't really want to go to San Diego, but I'm saying like, maybe I'll relieve you in Naples.
Yeah, that's probably more realistic.
Okay, well, anything else you want to say or talk about real quick?
No, thanks for having me here, and I look forward to getting through this PAXQ class with you.
Ditto.
If we ever see each other.
All right, well, thank you again.
Yep, bye.